Moira did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northeast as you listen. This is their story. In Cramlington and Killingworth, NHS workforce planning has broken the connection between people who want to train as nurses and hospitals that desperately need them. Training facilities sit empty while wards run understaffed, not because the resources don't exist, but because someone in Westminster decided the government that prints pounds might run out of them.
I grew up in Killingworth, daughter of a shipyard welder and a school dinner lady. My gran spent her final weeks at Wansbeck General, and watching the nurses care for her with such kindness made me certain that was the work I wanted to do. I qualified as a registered general nurse in 1998 and spent 15 years on medical wards before moving into nurse education. I live in a terraced house near the old colliery with my partner and two teenage sons, and I still believe that nursing is one of the most important jobs anyone can do. In 2019, the trust where I worked started talking about expanding clinical placements. They needed more nurses desperately, and I had the experience to help train them. I started applying for nurse educator positions at Northumbria University, thinking this was exactly the kind of opportunity the NHS needed. The university told me they had everything ready, the academic framework was in place, local hospitals were crying out for more student nurses, but Health Education England had capped their commissioned training places due to Treasury spending controls. I thought there must be some mistake. Surely if we needed nurses and had people who wanted to train, someone would sort out the funding. I contacted NHS England North East directly and spoke to workforce planning managers who confirmed they desperately needed more nurses. But, they explained, their hands were tied by national funding allocations. There is no funding, they told me. The Treasury sets our budget and we have to work within it. It sounded reasonable at first. Everyone has budgets. Everyone has to live within their means. I accepted it the way you accept that it's raining or that the shops are closed on Sunday. It was just how things worked. I tried a different approach and contacted Northumbria Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust about creating a joint training programme. The response was the same. We'd love to take on more student nurses, but Health Education England won't fund the additional places. Every door led to the same dead end. Someone somewhere had decided there wasn't enough money. In frustration, I visited the university's nursing simulation labs one afternoon. I wanted to see for myself what the constraints actually were. The labs were mostly empty during what should have been peak training hours. The technician mentioned they could easily accommodate twice as many students with their current facilities and staff. The equipment was there, the space was there, the qualified instructors were there. What wasn't there were the students, because the Treasury had decided not to commission the training places. Walking home, I passed the old Northumberland College campus that used to run healthcare courses. The purpose-built training wards were sitting unused since the college merged and courses were rationalised to save money. I stood looking at those empty buildings and something didn't add up. If there was no money for training, why were the training facilities sitting idle? My neighbour, recently made redundant from his job in engineering, mentioned he'd always fancied healthcare but couldn't find any available nursing courses locally. Here was someone ready to retrain in an area crying out for nurses with training facilities standing empty, and the story was still no funding available. When I mentioned this to a Health Education England administrator, she was blunt. The budget has been cut. The Treasury sets us our budget as if we might run out of money. We have to treat public investment in training as a cost to be minimised, not that as the means to get qualified staff where they're needed. That's when I started to understand what was really happening. The government that prints the pounds was telling me it couldn't find enough pounds to connect the people who wanted to train with the hospitals that needed them. But the people existed. The training facilities existed. The need certainly existed. What exactly was it that there was no money for? I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it. Except a household does not issue its own currency, the government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still working, still watching. I see the same pattern repeating across every department, every service, every constituency. People and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. But the cupboard isn't empty. Someone just decided not to fill it.
What Moira experienced has a name, fake experts. Think of how tobacco companies used to cite doctors who claimed smoking was harmless, or how pharmaceutical firms fund researchers who downplay side effects. The technique is always the same. Find credentialed voices willing to repeat your preferred conclusion, then present their authority as settled science. In Moira's story, every official she spoke to cited economists or treasury advisors who treated the household budget analogy as gospel truth. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, she was told. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The fake experts aren't necessarily lying. Many genuinely believe a government budget works like a household budget because that's what they were taught, what their institutions reward them for saying, or what feels intuitive. But repeating a false analogy doesn't make it true. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Moira's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The training facilities existed, the qualified instructors existed, the people who wanted to train existed, the hospitals that needed them existed, the resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Cramlington and Killingworth ranks 268 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025. The constituency has 2076 registered charities and received £59.8 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.